Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of What's in the Box, where we talk about what we're playing in Cube and what you should try out in yours. I'm one of your hosts, Drew, or Quad Nines.
And I am Zakiel. What's going on, everyone? This is our Eldritch Moon set review episode, in which we're going to be going over all the new cards in Eldritch Moon, talking about some, you know, what are the new archetypes that are now supported, if there's any fun stuff associated with that. But before then, we have a couple things. We have, of course, as always, our what's been going on outside of Magic, and so on and so forth. We have a channel announcement, and we're going to also do a crackback. So, as always, do you have any new pickups, any new, you know, outside of Magic life updates, anything crazy going on? What's been happening?
Not a whole lot of outside Magic updates. The kids are about to start back to school, so I get to sleep more, which is good, because I work nights and then they come jumping on the bed at like 8, which is, you know, about 2 hours after I went to sleep. But let me say, I did pick up a couple things. Open boosters, the guy on YouTube that opened up, like, you know, Black Lotus on screen and Mock Sapphire and all that stuff. I'd done some trading with him before and got that graded library and beta bolt and all that. And well, he opened up a beta starter on his channel probably, I don't know, 2.5-3 months ago. And in it, he didn't have any good, I don't think he had any good rares, but he had Dark Writ, Lantern War Elves, and Soul Ring. Nice. So I messaged him, and I was like, what do you want from him? He's like, get back with me in July, I gotta go out of town for a few weeks. And I'm like, okay. So I messaged, I like set a note in my phone, messaged him back, and he's like, yeah, sure. So we made a deal for him, and I got those in, and I can say I'm a big, big fan of the beta Soul Ring. I like my Judge one that I have, but it put in EDH, and I put the beta one in the cube. It looks really sweet.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, I also got a Soul Ring today, actually. I was able to buy a list, and I had a bunch of floating credits sitting just for a while at Card Kingdom, and I was like, you know, I want to get something nice. And I looked through my list, some of the stuff I didn't have, and Judge Foil Soul Ring just happened to be on there, and I was like, hey, I have enough credit. And they have one in stock, so let's grab it. So I'm happy. And on to our channel announcements. I'm happy to say that this will be the first episode with our new logo. By the time this is out, we will officially decide what the final version will look like. But I'm super happy that we can have that for you guys, for those listening. I know some people just get the MTG Cast logo and so on and so forth, and now we can kind of put this on YouTube without having like a blank screen if I'm ever to upload them. So I am happy for that. And then additionally, let's head into our crackerback.
All right, let me open one up here. I'm going to guess use my cube, and it's not Eldritch Moon up to date, because I usually like to actually have the cards before I do the update. But it's up to date before that. So this has actually got a lot of fairly recent cards in this pack, but some pretty strong ones.
And for those, quickly, for those who are not familiar, what is the power level of your cube and size?
Let me see. It is currently up to not quite 700. Let me see. It's 630, actually. I cut some a while back. It's everything up to power. So I going to pick it all up probably this October in Atlanta is what the plan is, but
very cool.
I don't know, we'll see about that. But yeah, just about everything except for power right now. I was going to wait and put all those in at one time, but the pack looks pretty sweet. The general decks I support are, of course, you got mono red, white weenie, blue X ramp, blue black artifacts or blue red artifacts, and some graveyard decks like Reanimator, and of course Storm, which I still support because I'm crazy. But it doesn't look to be much Storm in this pack. Got the first card is Deathrite Shaman.
All right, awesome.
Fiery Confluence.
How have you liked Fiery Confluence? Actually,
it's just amazing. Like every time I play it, it's like, and because I run a lot. I run all the Signets in my cube, and there's just a lot of Mana Rocks floating around. And sometimes you just blow up two Mana Rocks and you know, do two to their face or kill their Mana Dork, and it's like, okay, that was good. Let's go. So it's 4 mana, but except the value you get off of it, especially if you blow up a big mana rock, it's pretty good.
Yep, I agree.
One of my... The Tinker target that usually doesn't get there for me, Sphinx of the Steel Wind, is the next card. Like, when I cast it, they just always have, like... They just, like, kill it. But when it gets played against me, I'm playing, like, mono red, and I'm like, okay, we're done here. Thanks.
Yeah, I felt the same way with that him and Inkwell Leviathan in the Vintage Cube. Because I never got Blightsteel, and I was like, well, these cards are, you know, they're close enough. They're safe. Yeah. Never happened. Always died.
Yeah, like, oh, I'd get the Inkwell out and, like, get 2 hits in. They'd be like, combo off, kill you. Good game.
Yeah.
This is a fatty I've actually been thinking about taking out of the cube. Angel of Serenity.
Okay.
So it'll probably get the axe soon for one of the newer angels, probably in Eldritch Moon. But here's a 2-drop in red War Name Aspirant.
War Name Aspirant, nice.
Yeah. Lotus Bloom.
Mm-hmm.
Kiora the Crashing Wave.
How would you compare Kiora the Crashing Wave to Kiora... Is it Master of Depths? Which one do you like more?
I actually like the original one a little better. They're slightly different because this one can ramp you a little bit more. Oh, no, the Cure the Crashing Wave is the first one. Okay.
Yeah, first one.
That's what I like better. Okay. Because you can, you know, just be able to bubble something every turn. And the ultimate's really fast, like, because you play her, she goes up to 3, if you're plusing her, goes up to 3 immediately, so, you know, they've got, like, 2 turns, and that's it. Because once you get that emblem, it's really hard to beat 9/9 Krakens every turn, like, unless you're just playing a strictly combo deck. So, don't know, I like the original one myself.
Mm-hmm. I agree, I think, yeah. But go ahead, pardon me.
Gnarled Scarhide, which has actually been pretty good. I think I've only drafted the black aggro deck once, but it went in there. It did like 4 or 6 damage before it became irrelevant. So. Xenagos the Reveler.
All right. That's that is the Planeswalker or the God?
That's the Planeswalker. No,
the Planeswalker. Okay.
Tireless Tracker, one of the Shadows cards.
All right. I've been very impressed with that card, actually. I really like it.
It's like all of a sudden, like, they kill it or it dies in combat, and you're like, oh, I got these 2 clues sitting over here. I guess I'll crack those and draw cards now. Or, you know, you might have already cracked one already, and he, you know, was traded up against a 4/4. So it's just value. It's a great card. Mm-hmm. Clever Impersonator.
Yeah, I think that has been one of my favorite cards of the past couple of years, because that really took cloning to, like, the next... Like, I've seen all kinds of stuff, like, recurring. I think you were telling me a story of using Recurring Nightmare, and I think we did the same exact thing a couple of months later. Or anytime you can copy something that bounces it to your hand, you're just like, good lord, this is ridiculous. Just being able to copy anything is absurd.
Well, and then there's also the slight chance of going them playing a Karn, you untapping, copying their Karn, and then exiling their Karn.
Yep.
That's just tilt-inducing for them. So, oh, the Gitrog Monster.
Nice.
Have you played with this value train yet?
I have not played with him. What are your thoughts?
It's just, you know, you have to sack a land, but it doesn't matter because you draw cards and you get to play extra lands a turn. And, oh, by the way, it's a 6/6 with Death Touch for 5 mana. Hmm. So, I mean, there's no way to deal with it profitably. Like, I mean, I guess if they had, like, if the second you play it, they have just instant speed removal. Not real sure what kills it, because it's multicolor and it's black. And it's got 6 toughness. I'm sure there's cards that kill. I just can't think of any right at the moment. But, I mean, the main ones I usually use don't work on it. And like I said, if you ever get to untap with it, you like drawing cards and kind of ramping, even if you're sacking lands. I don't know. It's a great card. Really like it. It's a lot of Shadows cards in this pack. Archangel Avacyn. You got to play with it yet?
I have been able to. Yeah, this card is ridiculous.
let's give it Flash. That sounds good.
I actually like this card a little bit more than Baneslayer Angel just because of the ETB trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a bunch of just shenanigans you can do with really anything. Like, I think I was able to Phantasmal Image it and then let the, you know, let the original one die and then get it and get the indestructible trigger again. You can flicker it with Eldrazi Displacer and all kinds of stuff like that. And by itself, it's still a very, very, very good card. Like, you just win the game. And if it ever flips, then, or when it flips, your opponent is in a lot of trouble. So, I like it.
Yep. Here's one that doesn't get much love, but Murderous Redcap.
I like Redcap. I played it. I've been playing this. That card has actually been in my cube for a really long time. That was one of the first cards I bought because I bought, like, the FNM promo way back when.
Yeah, that's what I got.
And I like it just because you can, there are some, you know, combo elements that you can do with infinite damage. I can't think of them off the top of my head, unfortunately, but
The main one now is the new Anafenza.
Oh, that's what it is, yeah.
Because when it comes back in, you can put a counter on something. Or is that, yeah, I think that's how it works, because it's smaller, so it gets the counter, and if you have a sac outlet, that's all you need. So. Mm-hmm. And the last card is another really good clone. It's Dax Duplicate.
Nice. I like that card as well. I was actually thinking about Conspiracy today because of Conspiracy 2 that will be coming out hopefully within the next, 4 weeks, something like that, 3 weeks?
Yeah, 3 weeks. I think 3 weeks from now.
Mm-hmm. So, I like it. It's
What's your pick from this?
Titan with Haste. I think it's between Archangel Avacyn and Clever Impersonator if I'm feeling fun.
Yeah, I think I'll probably take the Impersonator just because I know I'm probably going to play blue. I mean, there's no Lightning Bolt or Goblin Guide, and there's no Storm card. So I'm probably just playing a blue deck, and that card's just whatever I need it to be, it'll be. So, speaking of not to get too off topic, did you see the new Planeswalker story that they had for Conspiracy 2?
I haven't been able to read it yet, but I've heard it was pretty good. Tell us about it.
I think her name's Kara or Kara. I haven't actually heard it said out loud. Ghost Assassin. Mm-hmm. And she's apparently the one that kills Brago because she's got the ability to go between the regular realm and the, what's the word, incorporeal? Basically the ghost world.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if she needs to jump through a wall, she just jumps through the wall.
Wow. And,
like, her knives can also, she has the two special knives that can go into the ghost world to kill spirits. So that's what people hire her for. But yeah, I have no idea what her ability will be, or even her colors.
Probably black-white, I would imagine.
I was thinking maybe black-red, just because of some of the art and stuff, because you can't really tell by that.
Mm-hmm.
But and also, they totally missed the boat on Tybalt. But, you know, we're going to let that slide. Actually, I think Rosewater actually commented, it's like, we've got too many planeswalkers. We're just going to say he went and went somewhere else. We'll see him another time. But, yeah, I think a red-black one would be pretty sweet, because the only one is Sarkhan the Mad.
You don't
count the Boas as Grixis.
And it's not necessarily a very playable planeswalker in cube.
No. But, yeah, I'm really interested to see the actual card. The story was really good, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, So looking forward to Conspiracy 2 and From the Vault Lore and all that other stuff that's going to break my wallet. So.
as will I. All right, so Eldritch Moon here. Eldritch Moon is the second set in the Shadows of our Innistrad block. It is covering the story of Nahiri summoning Emrakul to the Innistrad plane and Liliana joining the Gatewatch to try and defeat the evil giant spaghetti monster. How have you thought, or how did this set kind of live up to you in terms of, in relation to Shadows Over Innistrad, and then Shadows Over Innistrad as a block to original Innistrad?
I mean, it's not, Innistrad's, I think, the first pre-release I went to that I actually got to play and did well at, so it's a special place for it. You know, I love triple Innistrad draft, and just there's so many strong Eternal cards and cube cards that came out of that block. It doesn't quite live up to that, but it's very good. This set it feels like another Oath of the Gatewatch, where, you know, when they probably started making it, they're still doing three set blocks, and they just kind of had to jam three or two sets worth of cards into the last set. So you got a few more kind of bomby cards, mm-hmm. Real splashy cards. So there's definitely some really good cube cards in here. I don't know how many are going to be like in Legacy and Modern and all that, but there's some pretty sweet cube cards. Mm-hmm. Overall, the blocks, it's good. I'm trying to think what I'm trying to think. It's probably not as good as like Return to Ravnica Block, but it's up there over the last 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. If you were to give it a letter grade, what would you give the Shadows of Innistrad Block?
For Cube, I would say probably a B.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's broad, or, you know, I think more creatures than spells, but many of the creatures have been very, very strong, so I'm happy.
Yeah, a couple of the spells, they kind of, because I've heard some podcasts where they were interviewing like some of the set designers and stuff, they kind of edge over towards the EDH side. So they do crazy things, but they've got too many mana, mm-hmm. You know, like what's the blue mythic out of this set that we'll talk about, or probably won't talk about later, but Mind's Dilation.
Yeah.
I think it's got, like, the card bonkers, but like it's 7 mana, so it's obviously a EDH plant, but you know, there's some good spells, but like you said, they, for the constructed / cube, you got more of your creatures, so. Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, so, I think I would agree with that also. I'm pumped. You know, this set is, this block has been really cool. Innistrad was one of the first sets, and I guess blocks as a whole, that kind of got me into Magic when I was in the thick of things in Standard and really grinding out in EDH and really absorbing the flavor and the art of the set and the culture of what is Magic. And I enjoyed it, and I think Shadows of Innistrad, while I do have some issues with the power level of some of the cards in relation to the original Innistrad, I think from what they did was more than reasonable. I had a lot of fun, and you know, at this point, the only thing I can say is I'm pretty sick of Eldrazi. Like, I don't ever want to see them again.
Well, I mean, that's the good thing. Like, they, you know, destroyed two of them, and the other one got bored and locked itself in the moon, so...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless they actually do continue the storyline that Merit Lage is actually an Eldrazi Titan that's been locked away for a while, I don't think we got a problem, so that's good.
Yeah, so 10 years down the road, I'm sure they'll bring it back up, but enough is enough. Let's go into this set. Starting off with colorless, I guess. Let's just talk about one of the flagship cards of the set itself, Emrakul, the Promised End, a 13-mana 13/13. With flying, trample, protection from instants, and Emrakul the Promised End costs one less to cast for each card type among cards in your graveyard. And then finally, when you cast Emrakul, you gain control of target opponent during that player's next turn. After that, that player takes an extra turn. So you get to Mindslaver them, and then they get a turn. I think when I originally saw this, I was a little lukewarm on it, only because, you know, original Emrakul just kind of destroys the game. If it's ever in play and it gets to attack you once, the game's over. Like 90% of the time.
Yeah, this Annihilator will do that.
Yeah. This card, not so much, only because you can still kind of navigate around it. It can be countered, so on and so forth. But one of the things I underestimated was the ability to cast it for, say, 9 mana. Because you can, you know, of course, if you have 4 card types in the graveyards, it costs 9. So a 13/13 for 9 mana that lets you take control of your opponent's turn is really good. And then the Mindslaver effect by itself, you know, you really only need one turn to really kind of screw up your opponent. With this last vintage cube draft, series that we had of the past couple weeks, I was able to play Mindslaver, and I played against the Storm opponent, which I Mindslavered him on the last possible turn that he could be alive. I just cast all the spells, bargained for a bunch of cards, put them to 1, and then bargained the last card away just to have fun. So the Mindslaver is ridiculous. Of course, when you cast this card, you can do the same thing. You know, you only really, once again, need one turn to really screw up everything for your opponent. And I've been very impressed with this card. As we just saw, Owen Turtenwald cast it twice against LSV to get into the finals.
Yeah, actually, I think the finals haven't quite started when we're recording this, but yeah, I've seen it. And that's the thing about the original Emrakul. It's obviously a stronger card, but it's not fun. Like,
no,
if I cast it, it's fun, but it doesn't lead to interesting games. It leads to quick games, which I'm okay with in general. But this card, like you said, I saw it cast this week for 8 a bunch. I think you cast it for 7 in a modern type format. It's got tribal.
It's tribal, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe can you cast it for 6? Anyway, I know you can cast it for 7.
Yeah.
So, and you know, routine, like you said, 8 or 9, and you know, ramp decks and cube, that's a pretty sweet spot there. And like I said, you get the Mindslaver effect, you run their biggest creature into Emrakul, and any instance or any sorceries they have that could kill it, you just cast them on other things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, oh, 13-13 coming in with trample. So it is beatable. You know, something even from the last set, like a Reflector Mage, you know, can give you enough time to get to beat it. But it's a really strong card, and more interactive and more interesting games out of it come than over the original one.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I was lukewarm on this card originally, like I said, and I didn't actually have it in my initial build, but after being able to play with it, and just watching this recent Pro Tour, I think this card is a slam dunk for power, like higher power level cubes, only because, once again, it's not like, at the end of the day, we want to have fun playing Magic. I don't want to sit down and someone goes, Channel Emrakul, and it's like, oh, all right, unless I have Double Lightning Bolt, the game's over, and of course, I don't have Double Lightning Bolt, or, you know, so on and so forth. There's, I think, 99% of every time Emrakul ever attacks, you win the game. But this card, once again, like you said, you can interact with it. It's pretty good. I like it a lot.
Let me see. We talked about these cards some before. And one of the cards that I didn't like as much that is kind of big for Standard right now is Elder Deep Fiend.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the Emerge cards, which is a mechanic. I like it because, you know, you get this big body or big effect by sacking a creature maybe you're done with, or maybe it even has a dies trigger that you get some benefit from. But I'm more impressed with the Elder Deep Fiend after playing with it a little bit. The tapping the four permanents and having flash is the big thing.
Flash is nuts.
I mean, that they might even be wasting a removal spell on something. You're like, oh, well, in that case, I'll just sack this and flash this in and tap all your stuff down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little bit bigger on that card than I was initially.
Yeah, I think it's perfectly reasonable if you want to, you know, and that's the cool thing about the ramp targets. And I guess an interesting topic within itself is, what giant fatties do you include? Because there's a house of, you know, several hundred of them across several different blocks, which you could play like the giant sphinxes from every other set that we get, all kinds of dragons and giant angels. So you can really tailor your environment, especially with the past block or two, with all the giant colorless creatures that you can play as well, and the original Eldrazi Titans, and so on and so forth. It's really just up to you as a cube designer. What do you want your environment to be? And I think Elder Deep Fiend, like you said, has a lot of play to it. It has, you know, it's a very good card, but it's not broken. It's not something that's unfun. So yeah, I mean, once again, it's a very solid creature that I think can fit perfectly at home in any cube environment.
I think the big question is, do you put it in the blue section? Because it does have blue color on it, but you can play it in any deck. But, you know, it is in the toughest color to break into traditionally in cube.
Mm-hmm.
So there's plenty of blue 6 and 7 drops that I would rather have in my deck, but this one, you know, it has options on it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. In colorless, there are a couple other cards here. Decimator of Provinces is a 10 mana 7/7 boar, has trample haste, and it gives your team +2/+2 and trample, and then it has an emerge cost of 6 colorless and 3 green. I guess a fixed crater hoof, if you know, for lack of a better term. It is a similar effect and has the ability to you know, cost less with the emerge. Would you consider playing this over that card?
Not over it. I might would put it in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a cast trigger, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get this off, your team's getting bigger and they're getting trampled. You know, unless they have some special kind of counter spell that can counter abilities or triggers. But yeah, I like it okay, but it's no crater hoof. You can't it's not technically a green creature, so you can't
natural order
for it. You can't green suns in it for it. I guess you could Court of Calling for it, but dear lord, I mean, that's a ton of mana. So yeah, unless you just have it in your hand and can emerge it, you know, it's good, but it's not crater hoof good.
And once again, I think that is probably true. Once again, the two effects that I play are Crater Hoof and Great Oak. And Great Oak kind of has Great Oak Guardian, and it has a lot of tricks to it because it has Flash and it does the same thing, gives +2/+2, but it also untaps your team. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think this Distended Mindbender and Elder Deep Fiend are all, once again, reasonable fatties, which you can play in any limited environment. And if you do play them, and you know, usually the turn you cast them or the turn after you cast them, you're going to be in great advantage in your game and probably win the game. But you know, once again, none of these are bad cards, just depending on the environment you want to have and you want to create as a cuber. So
The one you just mentioned, Distended Mindbender, that's probably my favorite of all the Emerge cards for Cube. One, because it has a very black ability of you getting to look at their hand upon casting it. So it's not even in the field yet. So like that in-speed removal, you can, okay, you get to, let me read it, I guess. It's 8 for a 5/5, and it has a merge cost of black, 5. When you cast it, target opponent reveals his or her hand. You choose from a non-land card with converted mana cost 3 or less, and a card with converted mana cost 4 or greater. So you get two cards just for casting it. And like I said, if they have the removal spell, you just take that before it even enters the battlefield. Mm-hmm. You can take the big win condition. And it's in black, which probably is going to benefit the most from, like, say, something dying from, you know, the Emerge. So I don't know. I like it a lot. And it's kind of really a 5/5 after you've taken your opponent's two best cards is pretty tough to deal with. Mm-hmm.
All right. I guess what color do you want to start out with first? I have a bunch of cards on my list that I want to talk about that I think are all pretty good.
We can start with white, I guess. Go back to the top, I suppose.
Sure. I guess the giant, I think the best card in the set for me is Gisela, the Broken Blade. 2 colorless, 2 white for a 4/3 with flying, a first strike, and lifelink. Then it has this ability at the beginning of your end step, if you both own and control Gisela the Broken Blade and a creature named Bruna the Fading Light, exile them and meld them into Brizella, Voice of Nightmares. Something I just realized we forgot to talk about was the mechanics. Gisela, I think is, I guess the nickname has been Mini Baneslayer Angel. 4/3 first flying, first strike, and lifelink. Even if you ignore that for 4, is really, really strong.
Yes. It's a really good value, just all the good keywords.
Does this make your final list, I guess, would be the question?
Yeah, I'm basically just waiting to pick up a full after they calm down from the Pro Tour or, you know, Standard, and I'll just slide one in the cube because it's a really strong 4, and a white 4-drop is not the easiest thing to get into. I mean, there's some pretty good ones. So.
So I guess, quickly, before we go back, let's talk about the mechanics. The first one is Meld, and it's one I just alluded to with Gisela and Bruna. I'm sure everyone is familiar with them at this time. It's a mechanic in which you're fusing two creatures together to create one large creature, and literally on the back of each card is 1/2. And if you meet the certain conditions, whether it's paying a mana cost or having two creatures on the battlefield at the same time, you can transform them together and create one new card. Do you think Meld is applicable to the cube environment?
Not really, because I think there was only three different card sets that do it. Gisela and Bruna, which, I might put Bruna in there just for fun and, like, take out that, Angel of Serenity, because Bruna does have another effect that is pretty strong. Mm-hmm. Just to try it out, see if anybody can pull it off. The other two is, like, a black common and uncommon, which is kind of underwhelming in cube environment. And then the other one involves a pretty good red card and a land, which I don't think we talked about it in the colorless, but it's the Handward Battlements, which is just a solid land. It can give a creature haste for red and tap it. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like storm cards. I don't mind having them in my cube if they're strong by themselves and you don't have to have the other pieces for them to be playable. And both the angels are playable, Gisela being much more playable, obviously. And the red, I think it's a 3-drop. Yeah, the red 3-drop and the land are both playable by themselves. So, mm-hmm. As far as that goes, like I said, I'm definitely going to try them out.
Yeah, I agree as well. I think having Bruna in the list just for that you know, the meld interaction, even though Bruno may not be the most competitive card, and in terms of having like an optimal cube list, I think it's just pretty fun. Mm-hmm. And you know, having I really like the difference in mechanics, and that's something that really kind of sticks with me as a cube designer, is having not only cards that look aesthetically different, so old border and new border and foil and white border and whatever it is, but also mechanics of different styles and text. You know, I oftentimes, the card that comes to mind when I think of text that changes over time is Shadow Mage Infiltrator. There's like four mm-hmm. different wordings for what it is. It all is exactly the same, but you may not see, you may not have heard of this keyword, or you may not have seen the original text or whatever it is. So yeah, it's just something that's pretty fun.
Yep, and I don't think we'll be seeing much more meld as a mechanic, because like thankfully the Eldrazi are going to be gone. So, but yeah, I think it's a nice little, it's a nice mechanic, and those couple of sets can probably go in your cube to see how you like them.
Mm-hmm. You can take the next card if you'd like.
Okay, I'd like to talk about the new Thalia, Heretic yeah. Cathar. She's, you know, just a little bit more expensive than the original one. It's a 3 mana, it's 2 and a white for a legendary creature with first strike. She's a 3/2, and creatures and non-basic lands your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. So, of course, Nut Dice, Lightning Bolt. Okay. And it doesn't tax your opponent's non-creature spells, but actually the creatures and the, you know, the five color special is going to be way behind against this card. The non-basic lands coming in tapped, I guess some decks will do nothing, and but the times it's good, it's just going to win you the game.
Mm-hmm. Especially with fetch lands and someone who's trying to fetch a non-basic land, it's made two turns of down.
Yeah, that's not going to go well for them, I don't think.
But having this and the original Thalia out at the same time is pretty rough. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's funny that they actually just kill each other, though. Not because of legend rule, because they both have first strike.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they just, even the one that's bigger, they both die. So, yeah.
Let's see here. Next.
Another card probably has been seen a lot this weekend.
Oh, the Selfless Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Selfless Spirit is a 2-mana 2/1 flyer. And you can sacrifice it, or with the ability to sacrifice it, and creatures you control gain indestructible until end of turn. So it is a entire, you know, I guess an anti-wrath creature, or just a make combat math difficult creature that's pretty efficient in being a 2/1 flyer. And we've kind of the evolution of Storm Pegasus and whatever the other one is, Mist Charger or something like that.
Mistral Charger, yeah, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like I said, I know you're a fan of Dragon Lord Atarka in Cube, mm-hmm. like I am. You know, I'm going to really like that card as a ramp target or cheat into play target, because against the aggro decks, it just wipes the board. But I saw it get cast multiple times in the Pro Tour where you know, the Bank Company or some other, you know, aggro deck, and they're like, okay, I'll. They don't even bother targeting anything. I said, like, kill the spirit, because anything else I target is just going to get saved by the spirit when they sack it. So you're paying all this mana for a Dragon Lord, and you just get to kill one thing with one toughness.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if they have a Planeswalker, you can still kill that. But yeah, this card's pretty good. Just a 2/1 flyer for 2 with a pretty good upside.
Yeah, I agree. I saw this card, and it's been doing the work once again in Standard, and I'm sure it'll do work in Cube. And sometimes, you know, and that's one of the cool things, is sometimes cards like this, you know, all you need is just that 2-drop on turn 2 to pressure your opponent. Especially in a deck that plays, you know, once again, the Thalia of both types and, you know, Brimaz or whatever, Gisela. Those strategies can really, really kind of turn the game around if they do have presence on turn 2. And once again, have drawing this late game doesn't fall off. I mean, it meets all the check marks of a good creature.
Yeah. And once again, shows why Toxic Deluge is probably the best Wrath in Cube or any format it's legal in, because it doesn't care about this indestructible thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I like the card. It has been annoying the few times I've played against it. So. Another one, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about is it's an uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
It's Lone Rider. Have you played or seen this played?
I have not.
Okay, it seems pretty blah. It's a 2-mana 1/1 with first strike and lifelink. Doesn't sound great. But it says at the beginning of the end step, if you gain 3 or more life this turn, you transform Lone Rider, and it turns into it that rides as 1, and then it's a 4/4 first strike lifelink with trample. So, yeah. If you let this thing flip, and it does it on the end step. So, like, if you let this thing flip, it's really tough to race or deal with.
Yeah. I mean, this is probably one of the best equipment holders in the game, I think.
Yeah, especially something like it makes... Okay, this is how good this card is. It makes Sword of Light and Shadow good. Like, I gain 3 life, we're flipping this thing.
Yeah.
And actually, I guess you would gain, like, even if you didn't have this out, you could hit something else with a sword and gain 3 life without it even being on the field. Play it second main, and as soon as you go to instep, it transforms.
Oh, so, wow, that's cool. Yeah.
Like, I was telling the sob story a while ago on Twitter of I was in a Eldritch Moon sealed event, and my opponent had Thalia's Lancers, Audric, Gisela, and Thalia. Because I saw all of them in every game. Like, he would tutor for a different one every game. Mm-hmm. And then, so we got Gisela out, and I spent 3 creatures and a combat trick to kill her. And then second main, he goes, Lone Rider, flip it. I'm like, just like wanting to throw things. It's like, I can't deal with this. But yeah, this card's really good. Like, you can just gain 3 life, it's a monster. And even though it's just a 1-1, you know, first strike, there's a lot of 2-1s out there that it handles quite nicely, so.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Thalia's Lancers is another reasonable card, I believe. It is a... I just lost it. No.
3/2 white for a 4/4 with first strike and
yep.
ability.
Yeah. When it enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a legendary card. A legendary card... reveal it and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. So this has been making waves because, once again, the emphasis on legendary card. You can get a creature, you can get a land like Caracas or Gaia's Cradle or something like that. You can get... I'm trying to think. There isn't any legendary spells, so I guess that's it, right?
You know
legendary land creatures.
Legendary? Jitte.
Yep. Yeah, there you go.
You know it goes good with First Strike? Jitte. Of course, to be fair... anything goes pretty well, Jute, so, yeah. But, yeah, there's all kinds of cool things you can go get with this. Mm-hmm. And at worst, it's a 4/4 first strike. You know, not the worst.
Yep. I think that is it for white. Correct me if I'm wrong.
There's a couple of the Escalate cards that are okay, but the instant one is a little weaker than I like it, and the sorcery one, well, it's sorcery, so...
Yeah.
But yeah, there are better Escalate cards to talk about in other colors, so I guess we can go on. What color do you want to try out next?
Let's go blue.
Good. It's my favorite.
All right.
I'm not going to lie.
Go for it. Lead us off.
Okay, I'm not going to go with the quote-unquote best card, but the one I've had the most fun with and envision myself having a lot of fun with, it's Docent of Perfection.
Mm-hmm.
It's the, you know, continuation of the Delver Insectile Aberration line of cards. This one costs 5 mana. It's a flying insect horror. It's a 5/4. It's got a neat little line of text on it. It says, whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you put a 1/1 blue human wizard token on the battlefield. Then if you control 3 or more wizards, you transform it. And it turns over into... is, I think, perfected form. For some reason, I don't have the...
Final iteration.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I don't know why...
6/5 flyer and wizards you control get +2/+1 and flying. And whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, put a 1/1 blue human creature token... blue human wizard creature token onto the battlefield. So, it's pretty good. It's a card that needs to be answered.
Yeah, it's got the same, you know, trigger on both sides, but when it's flipped... it makes a 1/1, but it's a 3/2 with flying. So mm-hmm. It makes insectile aberrations. Just spits them out. And then it's a 6/5. So it's just... I can just see just some kind of tempo not even tempo, just kind of a mid-range blue control deck. And it's just like, you know, you just like they might wrath, you might you play a wrath and they play something and you slam this, and you've got just a couple cantrips and or burn spells or even a discard spell, and you're like, make a dude and then flip this thing. So I don't know, it's not the strongest of cube power, but it's really fun looking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, and I think you know, I've been a big fan of Delver ever since it's come out, and you know, I think Final Iteration is actually a pretty good card, because I think the middle one was kind of eh, but this one's pretty playable. The first and third versions, I think, have been pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So, yay! All right, going forward in blue, we have what is it called? The Moon, Imprisoned in the Moon, two colorless and a blue for a enchantment. And it is a enchant creature, land, or planeswalker. Enchanted permanent is a colorless land with tap. Add one colorless to your mana pool and loses all other card types and abilities. So a blue Song of the Dryads.
Yeah, it's, you know, blue removal usually isn't this good. It can't do the trick with, like, say, Purphoros or Thassa that Song of the Dryads can. But, you know, it gets all the, unless it's turned on, like, by Devotion. If it's just enchant. But yeah, it gets rid of all the troublesome planeswalkers. They've got that Caracas that's just wrecking your show and tell plans. You're like, oh, have a regular land that makes diamond mana. So it's really strong for blue removal.
And what's the lore behind this exactly? The Gatewatch come together and they finally decide to throw Emrakul in the Hell Vault?
Well, you know, the Hell Vault was made out of a chunk of the moon that Sorin pulled down somehow. But yeah, the moon's got some kind of properties. No, but this is basically what happened. Emrakul is bored. Like, she's like, okay, this isn't how it's supposed to be. I'm making all these wonderful things. Everything she sees that she's doing is, like, how it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, and nobody's happy. And, like, everything's bad. So she's like, basically, she tells, basically goes into Jace's dream and tells him what to do. And he still doesn't know it's her telling him what to do. Really. I'm going to get some of this wrong. And then when they're trying to do the spell, like he gets, oh yeah, I guess we can put her in the moon. So they're trying to do a spell. Nissa's doing all her power. Chandra and Gideon and Liliana's holding them off. Actually, Liliana may be out right now. But anyway, they're trying to hold them off. And then Tamio's trying to use all her power. And then all of a sudden, she goes kind of strange and pulls out a scroll. And then bam, Emrakul's in the moon. And come to find out, Emrakul mind-controlled Tamio. And like used her to cast a spell to imprison herself in the moon.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, it's really weird. So, yeah, if you don't read the, if you're not big on the lore or something, I understand. But if you want to get a little story behind the cards, the stories section on the Wizards page has been quite good.
Nice.
So that's where I read the story about the new Planeswalker. So, not bad.
And I think this is Imprisoned by the Moon is, once again, a pretty good card as well.
I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't run it. Like, I can't think of a good reason. It's splashable. Like I said, it's blue removal. It's in the three slot, which isn't, you know, super crowded. So,
mm-hmm.
Seems good.
Yeah. The next card is Worf Infiltrator, if you want to read that.
Okay, it's a 2-mana, 1 and a blue for Human Whore. It has Skulk. Which came out, of course. Did it come out in Shadows?
I think yeah.
Yeah. So it can't be blocked by creatures with power, with greater power. I think it's when the name actually came out. There's a morph that has that wording on it. But anyway, it says whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. If you do, discard a card. So it's a looter. It's a 1/1, and it's got the extra text on it. Whenever you discard a creature card, you may pay 2. And if you do, you get a 3/2 colorless Eldrazi Whore creature token on the battlefield. So in one way, it's a better looter because you can actually like get rid of your expensive cards, whether you can't cast them or you want to put them in the graveyard to reanimate them, and just pay 2 mana and make a 3/2. But the other side, it's worse than like Looter Ilkor because it doesn't wear equipment well at all. Because its main reason that it can get in there is it has Skulk. It's only 1 power, so only 0 and 1 power creatures can block it. But if you put a sword on it, it's got 3 power, or 4 power, whatever. So, yeah, not so good. once again, it goes well with Umezawa's Jitte, so
that. Yeah, I like this card. I think it's probably one of the best looter tied with Lutorial Core. But I mean, the discard outlet with something maybe like Survival is pretty big. And I mean, just retaining value into the late game, because eventually I think some of those looters just really start to fall off, because it's like, all right, I'm gonna need, you know, other than Jace, I'm gonna need to actually you know, have a significant creature on board. But this card you can have and just kind of have as a mini engine if you do have some other way to interact with it.
Well, it's like the best card to pair as Recurring Nightmare I can think of.
Yeah.
You know, because like it gives you the thing to sack and it gives you the discard outlet to put it in the graveyard. So it's just like, yay, just all the stuff, one card, and you know, you get to draw through your deck till you find that fatty, and then in the yard he goes and sack the token you just made. So,
so I am pretty excited for this.
Yep. There are there's a couple other small cards that are pretty good. Where's it at? I made a note about Summary Dismissal. Have you seen that card played any yet?
Mm-mm.
Okay, it's the 4-mana counterspell, but it doesn't actually counter it. It exiles target spell, so it gets around uncounterable, and it counters all abilities on the stack. So, like, say, if somebody casts an Imrakul, you can pay 4-mana and say no, and you don't get your extra turn either. So, of course, you got to work on the timing, make sure the trigger's on the stack and all that good stuff, because, mm-hmm. you know, rules lawyer and all that. But yeah, and the merge cards, it just, oh, it crushes them really bad, because you've already sacked the creature, and then you're going to get cast this, and the trigger goes on the stack, and it just all goes away.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, just 4-mana. It's not cheap, but I mean, I play Cryptic Command, and it's not Cryptic Command, but when you want this spell, there's not much better.
Yeah,
because like I said, it does get around uncountable. You could technically say no to an Abrupt Decay,
yep.
or you know, any of that stuff. So pretty good.
It's also pretty good against Tendrils, I heard. So,
yep, the Storm Trigger goes on the stack. You know, all the copies, and you're like, yeah, y'all can all get out of here. Thanks. and of course, I mean, there's what's the other one that did that? Well, Flusterstorm does that, and Counterflux, if you overload it, will copy all copies of a spell. Mm-hmm. But this one is good, like I said, because it exiles and gets around the other clauses. So, you know, won't be for every cube, but it's something to think about if you've got a lot of the, you know, upon cast triggers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is a perfectly reasonable card. There's a couple other ones. Unsubstantiate is a 2-mana one where you can return target spell or creature to its owner's hand. Pretty good. That lets you kind of play a nice tempo game and, you know, either bounce back a creature you want to control, bounce back one of their creatures, or just, you know, you can, even if you don't have time to, like, say you don't necessarily have a counterspell, you can bounce your spell back to your hand to essentially just negate their counterspell.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty decent card. I haven't been able to play with it too much. I was able to play with it once this week, and it was pretty cool, but, you know, in terms of the overall cube list, I'm not sure if this quite makes it in, but once again, perfectly reasonable. Especially if you are really big into the tempo-y strategies.
Yeah, it's got just enough play, you know, to be able to hit creatures already in play. I always do it wrong. Like, I have a choice of, like, when to do it and what to do it. I usually get it wrong, but even when I get it wrong, it's still okay. Like, I get a little bit of value out of it. Once again, it's one of those things that doesn't say counter. It just returns it to their hand, the Venzer type clause. So, yeah, it's not for 2-mana, too, so...
Mm-hmm.
If you play any kind of unsummon effect, I would probably put this in its place.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's move into black here. And there is our first planeswalker of the set. That is Liliana. Would you like to tell us what the flagship walker does?
Well, here she turns the Gatewatch into zombies and gives them the FTV treatment. I still want them, by the way. Like, I generally don't like FTV pulling process, but... they look really cool. I think it's Eric DeChamps.
Yeah.
Anyway, he did them, and they're just really good. The SDCC promo for this year. But anyway, Liliana, the Last Hope, 1 and 2 black for Planeswalker Liliana. Comes in with 3 loyalty. The +1 is up to 1 target creature gets -2/-1 until your next turn. The minus two is put the top two cards of your library into your graveyard, and then you may return a creature card from your graveyard to your hand. And the minus seven is you get an emblem with, at the beginning of your end step, put X, 2/2 black zombie creature tokens onto the battlefield, where X is the is two plus the number of zombies you control. So, which ability would you like to dissect first?
The plus one is pretty good, and I think we had talked about this before, but the majority of creatures in cube, usually like the, of cheaper creatures, I think someone had done the math, do have one toughness. So you're, it's essentially just being able to destroy target creatures, especially if you're going against an elf deck. And the majority of them, if they don't die, probably have zero toughness, or pardon me, zero power. Mm-hmm. So she can stay alive. She does a really good job of protecting herself. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good, and it's got the text that they came out with, like it was with the second first, Thorn.
The second
black-white Thorn, where it's like they had lifelink until your next turn, so it worked on defense. Well, this, they have the negatives until your next turn, so even if it doesn't kill it, like you said, they still have minus two power and minus one toughness if they do get to swing in. And I think it was a White Wolf or... Anthony, somebody did the math, like I said, did the math, and it was like a pretty good number, like almost half of all the 1, 2, and 3 drops this just killed, so, or made with zero power. So, yeah, really protects itself well, which is what you want in Planeswalker. So.
Mm-hmm. And then it's minus two. I don't think it's, you know, I think it's minus two is great in the decks that want it, and then okay in the decks that don't.
It's good, like I guess if you have that Graveyard Matters type deck, that's good. But also sometimes, you know, they just kill your bomb, and like it doesn't have to be one of the two cards that got put in the library. It can just be a creature card in your graveyard, and you say, "I'll take that back now." So it's a what is that, a Disentomb or Raise Dead? So I mean, you know, you plus it, you kill something small, then they kill your creature, you get it back. It's got play. And if you ever get the ultimate off, that's just it's like probably not as quick a win condition as a Symbol of Legion, but it's probably close.
Yep, I agree. It's really nice to see some of these cards in the context of Standard, because you kind of really get to see their full potential. And yeah, you don't come back from this ultimate. You have maybe two turns, but every turn it's going to get harder and harder. And if, you know, at the beginning, maybe you're able to pick off a couple, but it's just going to get you. So, I like her. I think she is the second best Black Planeswalker. Before, I thought Obnixilis may be better, but after seeing, you know, being able to play her a little bit, I did get to play her once yesterday, actually. I think she's excellent. She's no Liliana of the Veil, but, of course, I don't think we were necessarily going to get that. But card's excellent. I like her.
I mean, it's a 3-mana Planeswalker that's playable, and sometimes your opponent stumbles, or their early game has nothing to do with attacking a Planeswalker. Like, they had a keep that had a ramp spell and a mana rock and a 5-drop, and they're like, oh, okay, well... Or part of their plan was to have this mana dork in play, and you're like, kill it. And they're like, oh, I can't cast anything for 10 more turns. Okay.
Yep.
So, I mean, that... 3-mana Planeswalkers can just get there. I mean, Dak Faden's amazing, and is in much harder to put in decks. Like, even though this is double black, you know, it's... Yeah, it goes in any black deck.
Mm-hmm. The next card is Crypt Breaker. So, 1-mana, 1/1 zombie, which is big. 1 black, and you can pay 1 black and 1 colorless and tap it to discard a card. Put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield. Then you can tap 3 untapped zombies you control to draw a card and lose 1 life. All of that on a 1-mana creature.
So it's the Black Heritage Druid?
Yep.
I mean, it kind of is. I mean, you tap 3 and haste doesn't bother it. You tap 3 zombies and you get to do something that you shouldn't be able to do for free. You get to draw a card for 1 life. And it makes its own zombies. Pretty cool.
Yep. And, you know, pardon me. Some of the thing about black creatures is that I think on average alone they're probably worse, but we're continually starting to see more zombies, Matters card, more zombies in general, more playable vampires, so on and so forth. And we had talked about this before, but you know, maybe Vampire Tribal, if they were to try to get in the Legacy Cube nowadays, would not necessarily be that bad, because now we've hit a critical mass of good vampires. You know, zombies is the same way. You know, Relentless Dead is a card that scales infinitely better the more zombies you have in your cube. Cryptbreaker, excellent. So, you know, once again, maybe this card isn't playable. You know, if you, maybe for some reason you don't think it's playable now, which is a little crazy. But if you don't like it now, if you're ever to play zombies in the future, I think this is an excellent one to bring in.
You know, I listen to Limited Resources a lot. Just because it's that way when I do get to draft on Magic Online, I don't just incinerate tickets. But, you know, they were comparing this to a, you know, not as good, but like a Pack Rat style card. Like, you just play it, and it just kind of takes the, you can take the game over if they don't deal with it. So.
And one big thing, it says put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield. Doesn't say tapped.
No, like it doesn't have the.
They finally moved away from that dumb text.
Yeah, that was really big in the original Innistrad. You know, you had, what was it, Diagraph Ghoul?
Mm-hmm.
Is that it? And then you had the Army of the Damned. All of them came in tapped, which is like, why are they tapped? They're an army. They're breaking through the house. They're not tapped. But, you know, like you said, they've kind of went away with that in the last probably four sets, I guess. So glad to see, like, you can, I guess somebody could be asleep at the wheel and attack into this with a 2/2. You're like, okay, pitch my Gravecrawler, eat it. Okay. And then cast my Gravecrawler.
So, yep.
You know.
Pitch blood gas, whatever it is, yeah. Oath of Nissa, I think, is, you know, another really good card here. It's a legendary enchantment. The final oath in the oath cycle. It costs 2 colorless and 1 black. Oath of Liliana, pardon me. When Oath of Liliana enters the battlefield, each opponent sacrifices a creature. At the beginning of each end step, the Planeswalker entered the battlefield under your control this turn, put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield.
It's a zombies kind of matter card, or it helps the zombie travel deck type thing. 3 mana sorcery speed edict effect by itself is not probably cubable, but it has enough upside as if you are playing Planeswalkers, which, you know, I usually have some in my decks if I can get them. So, just getting those zombies and that protects your Planeswalkers and kind of builds. So,
Was there anything else in black?
Dark Salvation. I've got to cast this card a couple times and it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see the casting cost, you're like, oh, you got to pay a ton of mana for this, but you really don't. It's Dark Salvation is black XX. Sorcery, and it says target player puts X 2/2 black zombie creature tokens onto the battlefield, then up to 1 target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn for each zombie that player controls. So, like, you think, oh, I'd have to cast this for like 7 mana, make 3 zombies, and give something -3/-3. But it doesn't work like that, because, like, you might have something like Cryptbreaker, or I don't know, any of the zombies, Lotlith Troll, Gravecrawler, all these count, and any tokens you already had count, and sometimes you just fire it off for 3, you get a zombie and you kill the one butt, you kill the mana dork or something, and that's okay. It's a really scalable card, and it's, you know, like I said, 3 mana, yeah, it's not what you really want a lot of time, but it does something. And if you do get a couple more mana, or you do have it in that zombie deck we were talking about, it can be a really swingy card. Like, it can kill, you know, a 4/4, and you make, like, you already had a zombie. You kill a 4/4, and you have 3 more bodies with 6 power.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I like it.
I agree. There is one more card I wanted to talk about, and that is, quick note, Murder did get reprinted in this set with new art, for those who are interested in playing that card in their cubes. Haunted Dead is a really simple card that I think I've heard a couple people talk about, not necessarily in the highest power level of cubes, but Haunted Dead is three colorless and a black for a 2/2. And when he enters the battlefield, put a 1/1 spirit creature token onto the with flying onto the battlefield. Pay one black and one, discard two cards, and return it from your from the graveyard to the battlefield tapped. Gosh, I am like moving at 100 miles per hour today.
Whew. All that Seattle coffee around.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. But just some kind of recurrable effect that interacts with your graveyard is something that I've heard a couple people talk about as a, you know, a possible inclusion in, you know, this zombie-esque style strategies. So something to talk about, something interesting.
I'm actually looking at it because I built Modern Dredge, and it looks like it could go in there. You know, you get to discard two dredgers. If you ever get this in the yard and you discard two dredgers, and then you get back three power across two bodies. So, yeah, and that triggers things sometimes, just saying. So, I've been happy with it in Limited. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if it'd go in the highest power level cubes, but it's a really interesting card. I like it. It's a lot of different things you can turn the knobs on. Like, like I said, it makes it's a discard outlet for Reanimator. If Delirium is going to be a thing in your cube. So, I like it.
Yep. Let's move on to red. If you want to start off.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and talk about that. The meld card I was referring to earlier. It's Handwerk Garrison.
Mm-hmm.
It's two and a red for a 2/3. So pretty solid. It's a human soldier. And whenever Handwerk Garrison attacks, you put two 1/1 red human creature tokens onto the battlefield tapped and attacking. So the first part of the Hero Blade Hole trigger, mm-hmm. You get two 1/1s tapped and attacking. So that's pretty good for three mana. And it melds with Handwerk Battlements, which I said was the land that can tap for colorless mana, or you can red and tap it to give something haste. When they go together, they make Handwerk the Writhing Township.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you get all stats. And then if you ever did get to live that dream, it's just a beating. It's let me say it's a Eldrazi Ooze legendary creature that's a 7/4 with trample and haste. Whenever it attacks, you put 2/3/2 Eldrazi horror creatures tokens on the battlefield tapped and attacking. So if you ever did get both of them on the battlefield, you'd be attacking with 13 attacking damage, 7 of which is trample.
Yeah.
But like I said, even just the 3-mana 2/3 that brings along 2 1/1s when it attacks, it's a pretty good card. Gets the aggro beats on. The red 3-drop slot, it's got some good cards already. Like you've got stuff like, Chandra's Phoenix, Rabble Master, even something newer like, say, Sin Prodder, or Magus of the Wheel, Dualcaster Mage. But it kind of reminds me a lot of Rabble Master, as in, like, if you don't kill it very quickly, it's going to kill you.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So,
this card with Purphoros as well seems pretty good.
Yeah, seems good. I like doming my opponent for 4 every time I attack, and then smack them for another 4. So, oh, it's gross. And then you can, you can pump them with Purphoros too.
Oh, gosh.
I got a buddy that's got a really good Purphoros deck, and he tries to downplay it in EDH. He downplays how good it is. But every time I played against it, besides one, he has gotten out Norrin the Weary or Wary like on turn 4. Every time I played him, but one time. I mean, we played him like probably 10 times, and 9 times he's got out Norrin. And he's like, I just happened to draw it. I'm like, okay. But yeah, I'm like, this. I hope he doesn't see this card, because this card would be sick in that.
Oh, because every single time. So, because it comes back at that end step, right? So they can deal 8 damage by the time it gets back to him, kind of thing.
Yep. Anybody that plays or attacks, it's like, oh, blink him out. Here's that. So whenever it blinks out, everybody's like, play your spells now. Do it now. It's like, does anybody play Sudden Shock? No? Okay, we're screwed. Or who's got a Song of the Dryads for this Purphoros? Oh, it's so gross. But yeah, this card, Garrison, it's just a solid card. I will definitely put it in my red section, because it does what I want to do in red decks. It beat them pretty good.
Yep. And like you said, an excellent impression of a Hero of Bladehold and a nice flavor. I think Goblin Rival Master is new best friend. Have them both in the same deck, and it's like, no matter which one I draw, you need to kill it very fast. So The next card is Collective Defiance, which is our first Escalate card. We'll talk about Escalate as a mechanic really quickly. Escalate is, I guess, kind of a new take on modal spells. So it is, you know, Escalate and then X, whatever the cost is, pay this cost for each mode chosen beyond the first. So they're Escalate to, you know, pay mana, pay life, discard a card, whatever it is. So Collective Defiance is 2 red and a colorless for a sorcery. Choose one or more with Escalate of 1. Target player discards all the cards in his or her hand, then draws them any cards. Collective Defiance deals 4 damage to target creature, and Collective Defiance deals 3 damage to target opponent. Like, once again, the flexibility of this. We alluded to another really flexible modal spell in the Kraken pack, which was Fiery Confluence, which I really like as well. I think this is probably one of the best cards in the set, and kind of competes with Fiery Confluence. It's just a very, very efficient burn spell.
Yeah, actually, I've been playing with Exquisite Firecraft.
Yep.
And it just kind of seems like a better version of that. They're both sorcery, but this one just has much more options and scalability. You know why they named it Escalate, right?
Hmm.
Somebody said no to Mega Kicker. But no, seriously, I think everything is kind of, usually everything is kind of a take on Kicker in some ways. A lot of the mechanics are. But these choose one or more modes, you know, that's what I want in my cube cards. You know, versatility, you know, it does what I want when I need it. Sometimes it just, you know, kills a pretty good sized creature, 4 damage to a creature, and can do 3 to the face for, 4 mana? So,
yep.
That's not even counting the semi Wheel of Fortune style effect or Windfall effect. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this card is really, really strong. Ugh. Shuffling cards and just dropped all of them. No. Okay, in red, I think the next card here is, what is this, Bedlam Reveler?
I was not impressed with this card at all when I saw it, and the first time I drafted it, I was like, eh. Because, you know, in Limited, I mean, even if you're the Spells Matters deck, like, you don't have that many instants and sorceries in your deck. You might have, 10, 12?
Mm-hmm.
And drawing them all fairly early, so I was paying, 6 mana for this thing. I guess you should probably say what it does first. I'm sorry, but
it's not good. It's just on the Cube Tutor top red cards. It's 6 mana, 6 colorless, and 2 red for a 3/4. Costs 1 less to cast for each instant and sorcery in your graveyard, and it has prowess. So, like you were saying, you kind of want some spells in the graveyard, but you also kind of want some spells left over so you can prowess it. But it's like,
Well, it does take care of the spells left over part because the last ability.
Mm-hmm.
It says when it enters the battlefield, you discard your hand, which sounds bad, but then you draw 3 cards, which is good, because I like drawing cards. But this really is more of a constructed card, because, this in Modern Burn is probably a good sideboard card. Might even main deck it. You probably, turn 3 or 4, you probably have enough instants and sorceries in the yard to pay 3 mana for this thing, and it might be the last card in your hand, so you just draw 3 cards after that. But in Cube, I just don't see that happening all that often, because my better mono red decks still have some creatures in them, and I just don't want to draw this late game, and I've got 4 lands out, and it still costs 5 or 6 or something. I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'd like to hear some stories of people ranching somebody with it before I try it out. But it is a nice design space. I like what they did there. It's just, I think it's for the red decks I usually play, it just seems like it's more, I might test with it some, but it's not real impressive.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's move on to green here. One of my favorite cards in the set is a sorcery for 2 green and 1 colorless called Eldritch Evolution. And it is, I guess, the next step in our Natural Order, Birthing Pod, Green Sun's, Green Sun Zenith. What's another, tutor card?
It's kind of like, almost like Survival.
Yeah, Survival.
You're getting rid of a creature to get a creature. Instead of discarding it.
Yep, that family of cards. As an additional cost to cast Eldritch Evolution, sacrifice a creature, and you may search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost X or less. where X is 2 plus the sacrificed creature's converted mana cost. Put that card onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library, and then exile Eldritch Evolution. So, once again, you know, just another tool in that toolbox if you play that style, you know, if you support those kind of decks. The cool thing about this card is that it is, you search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost X or less. So there are times in which you want to, you know, your worst creature is a 4-drop and you want to sacrifice it to go get, like, a Reclamation Sage to blow up a moat or something.
Or maybe... Wait, you tutor for Reclamation Sage? What? Is that maybe... good in cube? I don't know.
Maybe you need some kind of, you know, specific card out of your deck that's less than what the sacrifice creature's card or mana cost was, then you can go get it. I like it. It's just really cool. It's really efficient. The art's sweet, and it's good.
It makes me want to play Rift Sweeper, so I can go get it again and do it all over. So, but yeah, it's good. It goes really well, obviously, with persist or undying creatures, being able to go even mana or down or plus two. You know, it's a pretty good range. Even if you sack a token, you can go get a 2-drop.
Sacrifice the Kitchen Finks, get a... And it's a creature card. It's not a green creature card, which is nice.
Yeah, any creature card. Really good.
You can get a... Something. What's something that you can get from Finks?
You can get an Archangel Avacyn.
There you go. That's bananas. Or you can get a 4 and get Resto and then reset your thing.
Yep.
There you go.
They were smart by making it Exile, but I still think it's strong. Still strong, even though you can't really abuse it by doing it multiple times, but it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything in green? I do have a couple other cards, but I don't want to hog the microphone.
Well, there's the one that I've been really impressed with in draft, and I know some other people really like it for a green aggro, is Kessig Prowler.
Yep.
It's a 1-mana 2/1, no drawbacks. It's a werewolf horror. It only has all upside in the fact that it has an activated ability of basically monstrous. It's a 4 and a green to transform it into a 4/4, which is the name of, I don't have the names of all the flip versions.
What? It is Sinuous Predator.
Yeah, so yeah, they don't you know, it flips over into a 4/4,
and it can be blocked by more than one creature as well.
Yeah, you can't double block it at all. So, and that's 5 mana, which it sounds like a lot, but you know, you drop this on turn 1, get in for 4 or 6, and then by this time you cast another spell, you maybe play a ramp spell, then the first turn that you don't have anything to do, you just flip it. You get a 4/4 that's usually relevant, so.
Mm-hmm. And if for some reason you play, what's that, Moon Mist or something like that?
Yeah, there's a
Moon Mist. Or is that Humans Only?
Well, there's a new card in the set that I've been getting blown out by in draft that transforms up to 1 target werewolf. And all your creatures gain trample. It's not a very good card. You wouldn't put it in cube, but yeah.
Waxing Moon.
Yeah, like there are cards that transform these at instant speed, and that one does have the upside of only being 2 mana and giving all your creatures trample. So, you know, if you got Werewolf Tribal going on, give that a shot. But yeah, this card's just good at 1 mana for 2 power, mm-hmm. No drawback at all.
Yeah. Once again, a continuation of green aggro. We have, you know, for me, it kind of goes back to the zombie theme. Like, I don't mind green aggro a lot. Or, pardon me, I don't care for green aggro a lot. Just because, once again, I don't think the deck is necessarily there. But as we continue to get cards like Kessig Prowler and just more and more jungle lions, the deck becomes better. It becomes actually supportable. And another card I think that is also pretty good in green aggro is Noose Constrictor. Yep. The new Wild Mongrel. 1 green, 1 colorless for a 2/2 snake with reach. And discard a card as an activated ability. Noose Constrictor gets +1/+1 until end of turn. So it makes combat math miserable. It is, once again, the second coming of Wild Mongrel, although it has reach instead of the color change.
And in 95% of formats, this is better.
Yep.
But it's got sweet art, too. That snake is giving that skeleton a hard time. So, like you said, it makes combat math miserable. if your opponent has like even just three cards in hand, you're like, how many are they willing to bend, and how many of them do they want in their bend? Like they may have, you know, Gristlebrand or a Madness card or something in their hand. You don't know, or Flashback. I'm like, sure, I'll bend Gristlebrand in this Flashback card, kill your 3/3. You know, just come at me. We'll see what happens. But yeah, it's pretty good. I say it all the time, but anytime I get like a good card on a base level that has upside, I mean, it's a 2/2 for 2 with reach with upside. So, you know, I can play with that. I can play the games of Magic with that. So,
let's see. I'm going to pause really quickly. I've got a phone call. Give me 2 seconds.
Sure.
All right. I think, so I guess there's one more card, or there's a couple more cards in green. That the first one I want to talk about is the big green mythic spider, Ishkana Graph Widow, 4 colorless and a green for a 3/5 with reach. And it has Delirium when it enters the battlefield. If there are 4 more card types among cards in your graveyard, put 3/1/2 green spider creature tokens onto the battlefield with reach. And then it has the ability 1 black and 6 colorless. Target opponent loses 1 life for each spider you control.
I actually really like this card flavorfully. It's set for, I heard that originally in R&D it was basically spider spawning. Like the I forgot if it was the end of the battlefield ability or the 7 mana ability, but one of them just did spider spawning. Like, whenever, like here's a bunch of spiders from a creature in your graveyard. But they changed it to 4, if you have Delirium. And I'm like, well, that's okay. Like, I guess if you got Delirium, which isn't crazy to do in a green deck, you can conceivably blink it and get an army of spiders. And then dome somebody a lot. So, but, yeah. And, you know, 3/5 with reach does stop a lot of things. Even if it doesn't bring along its 4 little spider babies. Actually, no, I'm sorry. It's 3. It brings 3 along if you have 4.
Yeah. 3/1/2s, yeah.
3, which is... It's really hard to attack into 1/2s with reach.
All right. I think... Is there anything else here you wanted to talk about? We were just talking about Clear Shot before the show started.
Yeah, it's kind of a gross combat trick. You know, we're talking about the Keswick Prowler and the Noose Constrictor. If you are pushing that green aggro and you want to add a couple more tricks to the deck to get that damage through, Clear Shot is kind of like a Dromoka's Command where you give something +1/+1 and okay, it's 3 mana instant, 2 and a green. Target creature you control gets +1/+1 until end of turn, and it deals damage equal to its power to target creature you don't control. Now, they don't fight, it just punches them. So, like, say you're attacking in with a couple creatures, you know, maybe you do it before blocks or after blocks, but you grow this thing, and then you can kill something else that's not blocking you or is trying to block your other creature. So it's a really swingy card if you can pull it off. You can do it on defense as well, you know, block, grow your guy so it doesn't die, and kill their other attacker before damage. So it's pretty good. Something to think about if you, like I said, you are pushing that green aggro.
Let's see. Is there anything else in green? I think that's about it.
Yep.
Splendid Reclamation is an interesting card. 3 colorless and 1 green. Return all land from the graveyard to the battlefield tapped. I don't know when you would do this, but maybe if you have some kind of combo cube, something to look at.
You do that in the Gitrog deck.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
Yep, that would be interesting. Little end game there, like, I have all the mana. Do something. But, yeah, there's a couple multicolor cards, though.
Yeah.
Quite spicy.
Yep. Let's go into, do you want to talk about Tamiyo?
Tamiyo is probably my favorite card in a while. They did price her kind of weird. She's Bant now. She's not mono blue. She's 1 green, white, blue. For a 4 loyalty planeswalker, which is pretty strong. The +1 owner is choose up to 2 target creatures. Now, that's not just your creatures, that's just target creatures. Until your next turn, whenever either of those creatures deal combat damage, you draw a card. The -2 is tap up to two target non-land permanents, they don't untap during their controller's next untap step. And the pretty reasonable minus seven ultimate is Ancestral Recall, and then you get an emblem with Omniscience.
As if Omniscience wasn't good enough.
Like, we get to play these cards for free. Here's three cards to play.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so obviously it's not the easiest card to cast on turn four or three or whatever with ramp because it is three colors. If you do get this card, you will automatically snatch up the Oath of Nissa, which makes you able to cast it anyway. They should be friends. But, yeah, the plus one is kind of an Edric type effect where you get to draw cards off of damage. I will note that it does say combat damage, not combat damage to a player. So it's like Jitai, you know, if the fighting happens, you get the, you know, it triggers. I've played this in Limited, and I played it in EDH. I'll target, like, the biggest thing an opponent has and my best blocker, or sometimes I'll target my two flyers and just get in there and draw two cards automatically. It's just so hard to deal with this card. Like dealing with it through combat, and the person that owns it still not making a bunch of value, it's like impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the double ice trigger, like it's like here's a four mana double Frost Titan, it's still got two loyalty. Your go. Like yep. it can't get lands, but it can get mana rocks. It can get any creature. Ugh, it's gross.
Yeah, the thing that sold me on this card was just what you said a second ago, the Jitai trigger, combat damage, mm-hmm. not to a player, just combat damage. I was like, all right, well, this is going in. I try not to support too many three-color cards, but I was like, this is the one.
Well, I don't think I had a bad card. Like, I had a couple of the Shard or
Rug and stuff, or Teemer and all that stuff, yeah.
Well, yeah, I had, like, it depends on if you count, like, Tasigur. Mm-hmm. Like, I've got Tasker in there and some cards like that. But, like, the actual, I have Sphinx of the Steelwind, Nicoboas, and Seed Rhino. And that's, like, it. So I was like, Bant, there's not really a really good Bant card. So this is definitely it. So it's going in, and like I said, every time I see the Oath of Nissa, I'm just going to snatch it up on the off chance I see Tamiya.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also just a good card. But, yeah, Tamiya is really good. It says draw a card on it like twice, so I automatically like it a lot.
And one of the draw cards in the same sentence says three.
Three.
All right, yeah, definitely one that I'm looking to hopefully pick up soon and jam in the cube. Our next multicolor card here is Spell Queller, a 2/3 flyer with flash for one blue, one colorless, and a white. I don't know why I said it in that order. But when Spell Queller enters the battlefield, exile target spell with converted mana cost 4 or less. And when it enters the battlefield, the exiled card's owner may cast that card without paying its mana cost. So you can flash this in to counter their counterspell, meaning that you can obviously exile their counterspell, and then when it dies, if there's nothing on the stack for them to counter, it's just dead. You can, you know, I guess get their best creature. I don't know, there's just a bunch of utility you can do. If they're to counter your own spell, you can flash in and exile your own spell, and then somehow remove your Spellcaller to get it back. This card's ridiculous.
yep, and it's really good they put that 4 or less on there, because now granted, in Modern and Standard, most of the money cards are 4 or less anyway, at least in Modern. But yeah, like this could just, it does a lot of work. Like being able to just flash in an exile, like you said, what if it's a pump spell?
Yep.
Like, yeah, when you finally kill this thing, here's your Vines of Vastwood. Go nuts! So, it's just, I don't know. It's on top of that, it's a 2/3 flyer.
Yep. And it says exile, obviously, and that's big against cards like Abrupt Decay, which we had alluded to earlier in that format spell.
It does catch Supreme Verdict, catches that.
Yep. Which, although it would be a little... Well, I guess at the same time, if your creature dies, the verdict isn't as good. But maybe not, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of times it's like, you know, you've already... You say this goes in, like, some kind of blue-white flyers deck or something like that, and you play So you play out of one drop, and you play a Thalia, and you play Geist of St. Traft. And the next turn, you just sit there. And your opponent slams the land and goes, you know, take your pick, Damnation, Wrath of God, Supreme Verdict, whatever. And you're like, nope, kill you. Mm-hmm. Like, unless they have, I don't know, Slaughter Pact. Like, they're not getting out of that. So
is this the... This is the same text as, like, original O-Ring, right? Where you can, like, if you were to flicker it with the trigger on the stack, it'd be permanently exiled?
Correct. Yeah, you can do the O-Ring shenanigans with this card.
Value.
Because the trigger goes on the stack, then you can remove it, then the remove trigger goes on, there's nothing there, and the spell's gone forever.
Yep. So. There we go.
Now, you see, I know how that works, but I couldn't remember that Snapcaster can't flash back an overloaded Cyclonic Rift.
Yeah.
And I know that, but I haven't cast one in forever. And I was like, can you do that? I don't think you can do that. So I had to ask on Twitter. And I was like, yes, I know, I'm stupid. But
I always got caught up when you would try to Snapcast. Like, can I snap back Daze or Force? Like, no, you can't do that. No. Why? Or like, yeah, something like that. Or like...
Like, you're giving it an alternate casting cost, so you can't replace that alternate casting cost with another alternate casting cost.
But you can flashback a Delve card and Delve.
Yes.
Which is...
You can also flashback an X spell. And have any number of X, but... Yeah, rules be tricky.
Yep. But alright, I think we have one more card. I know you wanted to talk about one land here. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, Gyrmach Sanitarium.
Yeah, I'd already talked about the battlements when we went over red, but yeah, Gyrmach Sanitarium. Card looks really innocuous when you say it. It taps for colorless mana. Excuse me. It's a legendary land. Not that that matters in our format. Although you can Thalia's Lancers for it.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. And it's got two tap. Each player draws a card, then discards a card. So everybody loots. Then you think, I don't want my opponent drawing cards. Why am I giving this to them? But, like, you know, in the colors that don't have a lot of card draw, say you put this in your mono red deck. Once you get to, like, three or four lands, you're done. You don't need any more. You just need cards however you can get them. And you can do this on, like, their instep. So, like, they don't get as much benefit out of it. Maybe they're already tapped out. Or you could do this if they're hell-bent. They just
basically discard it. Yeah.
They just put it straight in the graveyard. So there's no point within cast it. So yeah, it's like I said, it's not like standout look at me card, but in the decks that would want it, the decks that don't have a lot of card draw that, you know, spit their hand out really fast, it's pretty good. Just good value.
Mm-hmm.
You get to turn all those extra lands you don't need into maybe, you know, gas.
Yeah, I think it's a perfectly reasonable card. You know, I'm a big utility land guy, like I play Tabernacle in my cube for some reason. I just love utility lands. Like from this to Bazaar to Mutavault to Mistress Factory and Workshop and all kinds of, you know, quirky things in between. This is just a really reasonable card if you want to kind of change up your utility land base, because just try something new. So pretty fun.
Yep. And also it's got pretty good flavor text. It's a nut house, you know, sanitarium. It says, all are welcome. You know, in the Innistrad right now, there's a lot of crazy folks. So, yeah, everybody come on in.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have some cocoa and Sprite Tentacles. But, yeah, so don't see a ton else. I think we've covered about all of it.
Nice. Yeah, so Eldritch Moon, how would you... Well, we already said how would you rate this set, but I guess the next question would be, how do you think... I don't know. What is the next question? What are you looking forward to, I guess, after this set? And have you, you know, when are you looking to pick up some of these cards? Right now, some of them have just spiked because of the Pro Tour, but...
Yeah, hopefully the fulls don't... You know, a lot of times when you have these spikes, it's for people getting play sets, and they're not usually going after the fulls, so the fulls don't automatically spike, and sometimes by the time they're catching up, the regulars are dying back down. Like for Shadows, I got lucky and I cracked, I think, two of the three most expensive foils in the set while drafting on Moto. So I just, you know, picked up the other ones and then redeemed the set and came out a little bit ahead.
You've redeemed the set already?
Yeah, the Shadow set?
Oh, Shadow. Not this set.
Shadows, yeah. Yeah, I opened up like Avacyn and Arlancord. So I'm like, yeah, I guess I'll get the other ones and just. I redeemed it and that took care of those. This set, there's fewer cards, which is good. It's like 209 as opposed to like 250 or 249. But I don't know if I'm going to actually do that because there's. There's a lot of cube cards, but there's not a ton I want for EDH for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll probably just, you know, either trade for them or just hit up TCG Player.
Mm-hmm.
One of those things.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think I'm still catching up in terms of buying cards or buying cards from maybe a year ago. There's some stuff I'm missing from like late Battle Block, Battle for Zendikar, but you know, as always, we talked before, in the last episode about finance. You know, try to wait, try to hold it out. There's no there's no need to rush into these cards. Many of them will be falling back down. But yeah. But anyway, I'm
part of the damned anyone.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really happy with the set. I think it brought us a lot of good tools. And once again, the biggest thing for me was excellent cards, efficient in what they do. Many of them are very open. You know, what's the word I'm looking for? Just know, very flexible, you know, so on and so forth, and continuation of archetypes that we're looking to possibly support in the future, and zombies in what is it, not vampires but the other one, green aggro and zombies.
Yeah, green aggro, yeah.
So yeah, I am pumped, but I guess that is it. So next episode we have Conspiracy coming up, and maybe we'll try to get a themed episode in between then. Talk about some stuff. If you guys want to hear us talk about anything specifically or you have any questions, as always, you can hit us up on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter or YouTube at Zakeel Gordon and Merfolk Magic. And Drew, where can they find you if the fans want to reach out and say hey?
Usually find me at some form of Quad Nines. On YouTube, it's QAD, the number 9, and S. On Twitter, it's just all spelled out. And just, hit me up with a message. We can talk about some cube or just magic in general or just whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Pokemon Go. I don't know. I'm not into that. So. not that I don't think it's cool. It's just I miss Pokemon and I don't know what's going on. So. Thinking about looking into that. So if you got any good suggestions on where to start, you can tweet those at me.
All right, everyone. This is for Zakeel and Drew. This is our Eldritch Moon set review of What's in the Box, and we will see you next time. Thanks so much for listening.
Doo-doo-doo.